Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Max Grubb, who's serving as our worship associate.
The RE Committee is asking that you join us in helping Freedom House, which is Portage County's transitional housing facility for homeless vets. And when we asked how could we help, we were told that the needs are so great and so varied that the best way we could help is to give gift cards, like a gift Visa or MasterCard. So this is what we're doing. We're collecting from you. And the Portage, Mary, help me out, which bank? PNC, Pittsburgh National, I don't know. Endowment has graciously offered to waive the fees that are usually associated with this kind of card. And so all the money that is donated will go directly to the vets. Then they can use the money however they need, if it's gas to get to work, or if it's for new clothes for a job interview, you know, whatever that they truly need. So we'll be collecting again during coffee hour today and next Sunday. We're trying to give a $25 gift card to all 17 vets. And we're a little bit of a ways from that goal, so that your help would be appreciated. Thank you.
We feel as if we have been hit with a bucket of ice water. This new thought, new perspective, new idea concerning our life, our life in this world. And yet, sometimes, it's as gentle as a feather landing on the ground before us. Come join me in this journey of enlightenment. Come, let us worship together.
Today, it is our privilege to witness the dedication of a family to two children and to renew our own dedication to all the children of the world. Today, it's our privilege to bless these two children, and in doing so, to remind ourselves of the blessing that is available for all the children of life. Let us join together in the spirit of gratitude and of hope. What name shall we call you?
Elliot.
And what name shall we call you?
Leah.
Leah and Elliot, we name you as your parents have named you. May you always remember who you are and that you belong. Isabel, are you prepared to dedicate yourself to your son and to your daughter? Please share with us your promises.
Elliot and Leah, my dearest ones, I promise to love you with all my heart. I will guide you and shepherd you on your journey through childhood and into adulthood. I promise to help you navigate through life's many lessons, giving you guidance and support when needed. I promise to provide a nurturing and supportive home that has the resources for you to flourish creatively, emotionally, physically, psychologically, and intellectually. I promise to always listen and be a sounding board for your thoughts and wishes, goals and desires. Know that there will always be a place in my heart for you to confide and share, a place that is full of trust and love. I promise to teach you to be respectful and reverent for all creatures and for the environment, our Mother Earth. Through this, I hope to instill in you a strong, compassionate center and a sound moral compass in which to travel through your lives. I will continue to share with you my faith and gratitude for life's many blessings and mysteries in hopes that it will awaken yours.
Leah and Elliot, your grandmother is also here to be a part of this blessing. Pilar, will you join us?
Thank you.
To you, Leah and Elliot will look for guidance and affection, encouragement and understanding. Will you dedicate yourself in love to their nurture and promise to support Isabel in her role as a parent?
Absolutely, always.
Thank you. And did you have an additional something that you wanted to say?
Yeah, I will say to Leah and Elliot that this journey of life is a learning of love all through. So I want to learn with you and receive much of the gifts that you in your innocence bring me and be there always. for you to learn love.
As members and friends of the congregation, we too share in this dedication. Will you welcome Leah and Elliot into our community? If so, please say, "We will." Will you recommit yourselves to the vision of religious community in which all children are welcome and promise to do your part in the creation of a world in which all children may thrive? If so, please say, "We will." We want to give these children something to help express our deepest wish for them and to help them remember this moment. So we are giving them the gift of sugar, representing life's sweetness. We wish for that for you in abundance. We give them the gift of rice. May your life bring forth many fruits, even from the smallest seeds. We give you a silver coin that in all your life you may have all that you need and even more to share. And lastly, we give you the gift of white cotton that you may live to become white-haired and wise. Accept these gifts in the spirit of hope that love may be transmitted across the generations.
Leah and Elliot, you are precious, and so today we bless you. We bless you with earth. Let me see your hand. That you may always know the power of home, and that you remember and respect your body as a good and beautiful gift. We bless you with air. That you may always remain open to the winds of change. You will know joy and sorrow, satisfaction and disappointment. May you feel your feelings and know them also as good and beautiful gifts. We bless you with fire. That you may always know the passion of the mind and inspiration. May you have a love of learning, truth, and discovery. And we bless you with water. Let me see your other hand. The source from which all life springs. May you always know the wonder of life and the creativity that burns in the spirit. We bless you with a rose, that your life may unfold in beauty.
And finally, we bless with our voices. Will you please stand as you are willing and able and speak together the words of blessing printed in your order of service? Leah and Elliot, we welcome you. May you never unlearn your sweet gentleness. May you win no victory which harms either yourself or others. May you keep tame that which rages dangerous within us all. May you ask for forgiveness openly and grant it often. May you respect yourself and envy none, remembering always who you are. May you build good teachers all the days of your life, honoring their vision, walking forward in their name. May you feel compassion for all living things, and by your actions lessen the tides of human sorrow. May you abide always in trust, resting in the spirit of life that embraces us all. May you sing your heart's own song, knowing great joy, great peace, and great love. Amen.
Our wisdom words today come from the Buddha. This was one of his central teachings. Hatred never ceases by hatred, but by love alone is healed. This is the ancient and eternal law. Let us be here now. Let us be here now together. Breathing in all the joys and sorrows that have been spoken, breathing out love. Breathing in compassion for our own experience. And breathing out peace. Let us be here now. Breathing in, we recognize that we have all we need. Breathing out, we know that we have enough to share. For all of the blessings we have been given, we are grateful. Amen.
Huneng founded the Southern School of Zen, which encouraged intuition and spontaneous enlightenment, rather than formal readings and literal teachings of sutras. This story comes from the autobiography of Huneng. The nun, Wu Jingkang, once asked Huneng, the sixth patriarch, to explain passages of the Nirvana Sutra to her. Huneng couldn't read, and he asked her to read the passages aloud. Astonished that the Reverend Zen Master could neither read nor write, Jingkang wondered how Huneng could understand the teachings. Huneng replied, "Words are not truth. Truth is like the moon, and words are like my finger. I can point to the moon with my finger, but my finger is not the moon. Do you need my finger to see the moon?"
Pema Chodron is one of the most prominent Buddhist teachers in the West today and a leader in teaching meditation and how it applies to everyday life. She is resident teacher at Gampo Abbey, a monastery in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. This reading is excerpted from her book, The Places That Scare You, A Guide to Fearlessness in Difficult Times. When I was about 6 years old, I received the essential bodhicitta teaching from an old woman sitting in the sun. I was walking by her house one day, feeling lonely, unloved, and mad, kicking anything I could find. Laughing, she said to me, "Little girl, don't you go letting life harden your heart." Right there, I received this pith instruction. We can let the circumstances of our lives harden us so that we become increasingly resentful and afraid, or we can let them soften us and make us kinder and more open to what scares us. We always have this choice. If we were to ask the Buddha what is bodhicitta, he might tell us this word is easier to understand than to translate. He might encourage us to seek out ways to find its meaning in our own lives. He might tantalize us by adding that it's only bodhicitta that heals, that bodhicitta is capable of transforming the hardest of hearts and the most prejudiced and fearful minds. Citta means mind, and also heart or attitude. Bodhi means awake, enlightened, or completely open. Sometimes the completely open heart and mind of bodhicitta is called the soft spot, a place as vulnerable and tender as an open wound. It is equated, in part, with our ability to love. Legend has it that his mother dreamed a white elephant entered her body, causing no pain. 10 months later, as she walked in the garden, the child emerged painlessly from under her right side. The infant was able to walk. Lotus flowers bloomed under his feet with every step. The infant was also able to talk. He announced that this would be his last lifetime. This was no ordinary child. Of this, the king was certain. So he summoned his court astrologers to predict the child's future. 7 agreed that the child was destined either to become a great king or a great renunciate. 1 astrologer was convinced his destiny was to become a great renunciate. His father determined that it should not be so. The year, most scholars agree, was around 563 before the Common Era in what is now southern Nepal. The child's name was Siddhartha Gautama. His father was the ruler of one of the minor kingdoms in India at the time, and his wealth enabled to provide his son with the best of everything. Gautama had palaces, 3 of them, in which to luxuriate. Beautiful women to wait on his every desire. He grew to be talented at everything he did, and handsome too. He was skilled in both sciences and arts, and at the age of 16, he was married to a beautiful princess, and she bore him a son, Rahula. Gautama had everything a man could want. But not only that, the king also ordered that sickness, old age, and death should be banished from his kingdom. When Gautama left the confines of the palace, runners were sent ahead of him to clear the road of anybody ill, old, or corpses. Until one day, a bent and tired old man escaped the notice of the guards. It is said that when the prince learned that all people who live long enough eventually become like the old man standing before him, he reacted like a bull when lightning strikes a meadow. Gautama eventually found the courage to venture forth on 3 more trips. On the first, he encountered a sick person. On the second, he observed a corpse being carried to a burial ground. And on the third, he saw a monk meditating underneath a tree. Having learned the reality of illness, infirmity, and death, the prince determined that he would renounce his standing to become a seeker after truth. He asked his father to let him go, and his father begged him to stay. He said, "I'll stay if you can promise me 4 things, that you will never become sick, you will never get old, you will never die, and you will never lose your fortune." His father said, "I'm sorry, my son, I cannot promise you those things." And he said, "Then I must go." And so off he went, wandering 6 years. He began his quest as a disciple of master meditators who taught him how to achieve deep states of blissful concentration. When he equaled the attainments of his teachers, he journeyed on to join a band of ascetics. He fully embraced the austere measures of his new teachers, excelling in the ways of self-denial. One day, he even fainted from weakness. That experience taught him that bodily mortification was not the truth he sought. So he set off once again, devoting himself to a disciplined combination of rigorous thought and mystic concentration. At last, sensing that he was near a breakthrough, he determined to sit down underneath a bow tree and not to get up until he found what he sought. During that night of meditation, he was tested. Mara, the god of desire, saw that the prince was seeking to free himself and went on the attack. First, Mara sent a series of storms: wind, rain, rocks, weapon, lives, coals, burning ashes, sand, mud, and darkness. With each storm, the prince remained calm and meditated, and the calamity turned into blossoming petals falling from the sky. Next, Mara sent his 3 beautiful daughters, Lust, Thirst, and Discontentment, to persuade the prince, but he remained unmoved. Finally, Mara challenged Gautama's right to be occupying the spot where he sat. The prince reached out his right hand to touch the earth, and the goddess of the earth affirmed his right to be there. Mara finally withdrew. For the rest of the night, the prince meditated. During the first watch of the night, he had a vision of all his past lives and saw the persistence of the person through samsara, the cycles of birth and death. During the second watch of the night, he gained insight into the workings of karma, how beings rise and fall as a consequence of their deeds. In the third watch of the night, he was transformed. What exactly he understood is reported differently by various schools of Buddhism, but all agree that he became a Buddha, an awakened one. This past Wednesday, December 8th, Buddhists around the world celebrated Bodhi Day, the day of the Buddha's enlightenment. In previous years, I haven't marked Bodhi Day in our Sunday morning services because it falls right in the middle of the Christian season of Advent. Many of us are preparing ourselves personally for the coming of Christmas, and it seems important to note that, to respond to that experience in church. But this past fall, some members of our congregation participated in adult religious exploration class studying Eastern world religions, Buddhism included. So today, this year, seemed a good year to note the significance of Bodhi Day along with the influence of Buddhism on Unitarian Universalism. The influence reaches far back into our history. In 1844, Elizabeth Palmer Peabody published a rendition of a chapter from the Saddharma Pundarika Sutra in the transcendentalist journal The Dial. The chapter on the preaching of the Buddha was the very first Buddhist text to be published in the English language. Other prominent transcendentalists, including Emerson and Thoreau, read widely in the Buddhist texts that were available to them. Given the profound differences between their own Western Christian religious heritage and the Eastern religions they were exploring, it isn't surprising that when we look back now, we can see that they were a little confused about the differences between Hinduism and Buddhism. But despite that lack of clarity, the interest in Buddhism remained strong amongst Unitarians and later Unitarian Universalists. Today, there are more than 100 sanghas or Buddhist groups in as well as a national network called the UU Buddhist Fellowship. The UU Sanghas practice a number of forms of Buddhist meditation, including Zen, Tibetan, and insight meditation. There are a number of differences between the various Buddhist schools, but what they share is devotion to the passage from mindlessness to enlightenment. So what is enlightenment? Toward the end of the Buddha's life, when in India was on fire with his message, people came to him asking him what he was. Are you a god? No. Are you an angel? No. Are you a saint? No. Then what are you? Buddha answered, I am awake. He was awakened to the source of human suffering and enlightened about the path to liberation from suffering, nirvana. It is said that after the Buddha had been awakened, Mara appeared with one last temptation. No one is going to understand a truth profound as you have discovered. Why not just leave the world to its troubles and permanently enter into nirvana? It's said that the Buddha considered the offer seriously. He was tempted, but in the end he said, there will be a few who understand. And so he went out to teach. The essence of the first teaching he transmitted are known as the four truths. The first is the truth of suffering. The Buddha taught that we suffer when we are ill, infirm, or confronted with death, and also when we are separated from what we love and burdened by what we hate. The second truth is about the cause of suffering. Ignorance about the true nature of things is the root of suffering. Specifically, ignorance about the nature of the self that leads people to desires, cravings for private fulfillment. The third truth describes the goal, the cessation of suffering, and the fourth truth outlines the path to achieve that goal, the Eightfold Path. The steps on the path include right knowledge, right aspiration, right speech, right behavior, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right absorption. For nearly half a century, the Buddha taught those with the potential to understand the pathway to liberation. He founded an order of monks, kept up a rigorous schedule of public teaching and private counseling, and maintained his own discipline of daily meditation and annual retreat. All of his followers recognized him as especially gifted. They felt that he had greater depth than they could even put words to, so they called him Sakyamuni, silent sage of the Sakya clan, symbol of something that cannot be described, and they also called him Tathagatha, the thus come, the truth winner, and the perfectly enlightened one, he alone who perfectly knows and sees face to face the universe. Just before he died, the Buddha gave his final instructions. He told his disciples to take refuge in the law, the teachings he had given them. He told them, be ye your own lamps, be your own refuge, work out your own salvation. And he also told them to teach others what he had taught them for the benefit of many and out of compassion for the world. After he died, his disciples heeded his teaching, but as it might be expected, they didn't all agree about what it was exactly that he had taught. The group that came to be known by the name Theravada, the Way of the Elders, was especially moved by the Buddha's instruction to work out your own salvation. They emphasized progress through wisdom and argued that serious devotees should become monks and fully devote themselves to the path to liberation. Another group, which claimed the name Mahayana, the Great Raft, made a larger place for lay practitioners within Buddhism and emphasized the importance of compassion and the responsibility of enlightening others in the path to liberation. One other dominant movement evolved some years later, primarily in Tibet, called Vajrayana, the Way of Strength to Realize Buddha's Wisdom and Compassion. This path is distinguished from the others in its emphasis on using physical energies, emotions, intellectual, and spiritual energies on the path to liberation. While the Theravada and Tibetan traditions remain fairly unified, the Mahayana tradition divided into a number of different schools. When Mahayana Buddhism met Taoism in China and Japan, the Zen sect was formed. Zen is one of the best known forms of Buddhism in the West and has been embraced by many Unitarian Universalists. Zen training emphasizes seated meditation and is distinctive for the cones used by those experienced in meditative practice. The purpose of the cone, or the problem, is to train the mind on puzzles that may seem absurd or even nonsensical. Max and I thought about offering you one such cone as one of our readings today, but then thought that you might get stuck there and be unable to follow the rest of the service. So instead, we chose the story about the moon and the finger, which highlights the Zen appreciation for the value of intuitive insight. Zen practitioners use cones in their meditation in order to take the mind to the limits of reason, thereby making way for larger understanding. That understanding is then taken back out into the world, enabling the practitioner to live in greater freedom and harmony. When I was a seminary student, I tried studying at a Zen center. I knew several people who practiced Zen meditation as their primary spiritual practice, and I liked what they told me about its influence in their lives. I was looking for a practice of my own, so I decided to try it out. I didn't stay with it for very long, though. Something was missing for me. Shortly thereafter, I was introduced to the writings of the Tibetan Buddhist nun Pema Chodron, who we shared with you earlier in the service. I found in her teaching what I was missing. I commend her work to you, especially if you would like to explore Buddhist teachings in compassion and loving kindness. The meditation practice Pema Chodron teaches emphasizes learning to stay present with ourselves, including our embodied experience. She counsels leaning into emotions when they arise as a way of opening our hearts. She teaches that we must begin by cultivating compassion and loving kindness for ourselves first. This opens the way for us to extend compassion and loving kindness to others. She tells a story she heard from the meditation teacher Jack Kornfield while he was in Cambodia during the time of the Khmer Rouge. 50,000 people had become communists at gunpoint, threatened with death if they continued their Buddhist practices. In spite of the danger, a temple was opened in the refugee camp, and 20,000 people attended the opening ceremony. There were no lectures or prayers, but simply continuous chanting of one of the central teachings of the Buddha. Hatred never ceases by hatred, but by love alone is healed. This is the ancient and eternal law. That's teaching that every single one of us can embrace. May it be so, and amen. You are a good and loving people. Go now in peace and greater service. Amen.